people who love them.
Hello and welcome. This is The Thing About Cars again in Strongbox West, this beautiful day in Atlanta. Of course, by the time this episode airs, it might be a swampy, steamy, rainy mess all over again. But for now, it's a great sunny day and we're all kind of liking it. Around the table today we have...
Becca.
Ben.
And I'm Mickey. Just some quick items of business. Thank you for the reminder. We love it when people rate us on iTunes or Spotify. That rating goes a long way to making us visible in more searches so that people can find us. Thank you for rating us. If you have feedback for us or want to join us as a guest on the show, even go to thethingaboutcars.com, click the contact tab and send us a message that way. And we will be back in touch with you. We love getting feedback from folks, and the feedback by and large has been pretty good. You know, people seem to really like what we're doing. But I do often wonder if we ought to change things up a bit. We're gonna have some other conversations about that. So, having said that, let's just jump right into our topics list for today. Becca looks like she's got something ready to go.
On the Death Wobble article.
Yeah.
It was something. I get these little news pop-up teasers on my phone, and I had followed one. And there was a recent article that was published by a local news source regarding Death Wobble. But it was pertaining to the Ford F-150. And the way this article went on, the way they were stating things, sounded like this was a brand new problem, never had been seen. And it was so bad with Ford that the Ford people that were suffering from it had dubbed it the Death Wobble. And I was going to post it onto the Thing About Cars Facebook. I don't know if a rant or an FYI or what have you. The Death Wobble has been around for a very long time. It's common in chassis and setups like that. The Jeeps have been plagued with that, particularly the Wrangler type. So the CJs and whatnot, going to way back when. It's not new to Ford. So, and it's not that I'm trying to save face for Ford. It was just, it's been around a long time. It's not that Ford is suddenly being plagued that they've created this new horrible term for it.
Well, in the last episode, we mentioned that the oldest documented car accident was caused by a gas-powered buggy hitting a tree root. Now, I can't imagine that a tree root would make much of a difference to today's modern vehicles. But in those days, I'm thinking that that buggy hit it. Had a death wobble and simply ran off the road. But my guess. I mean, we have no idea.
Or he couldn't avoid it. But I mean, the what was it, 1891? Mm-hmm. The suspension system is totally different. And like I was saying, it kind of plagues the higher up, more sport utility, off-road, that kind of setup. Not to say it can't. I have actually experienced it quite a bit in my Pontiac when it was moving on its own.
Speaking of which. Holden is going bye-bye.
Well, see, my friend sent me the article and I didn't click on it. I was asking him because Holden had already been shut down in Australia. The article, the title that he had sent me said Australian, but yet Australia had only been selling it since 2017. The manufacturing had moved to Germany in 2017. Are they shutting down Germany? They're shutting down all of it?
That's a good question.
So now it's going to be that much harder to find parts for my car?
Yeah, I think it's, if it were, you know, and you did not ask, but if it were me, I would get rid of it.
Or just change the guts.
Or completely just
that
change
too,
the engine.
Yeah.
You'd swap out the engine. Mm-hmm. So here's an article from Road and Track 5 days ago. GM is shutting down Holden. Autoblog, also 5 or 6 days ago, GM kills Holden. So, it looks like it's actually happening.
Wow. I do recall reading something to the effect that they do want to focus much more on their U.S. production.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not surprised.
But they had some really good things to offer down there. Why don't they make – they hardly ever tapped it. And aside from mine, yes, mine had an issue. From what I understood, they had to put that on the 6.0 for the EPA here in the United States. The 6.2 didn't have it. The V6 didn't have it. And they were good, strong engines. Right. And, I mean, when that car was working, even with that stuff, it was a fun car. Why don't you just bring more of that to the U.S. again then?
But since when has any of the major car companies made a marketing decision like this or even a production decision like this that made sense to many of the rest of us?
When Ford decided not to kill the Mustang in 1993?
Okay, that was probably a good idea. But even then, the idea that I was on the chopping block for a minute just kind of shocks me.
And even better yet, decided not to replace the Mustang with the Ford Probe. I'm just saying, Probe.
So, you know, it's things like Honda getting rid of the Prelude or getting rid of the S2000. I'm like, these are cars with real driving spirit. And
Right.
Yeah. And so, you know.
The Prelude especially, though.
Right.
That was.
It wasn't expensive. It was a nice, approachable sports car. And yet Honda says, well, the market for it's disappearing. And they simply eliminated it, which.
If it's not selling.
If it's not selling.
Yeah. The Fiero is an interesting case because, joke about the Fiero all you want, but by the end of its production run, it was a pretty competent, pretty decent little car.
Yes.
Problem was sales were still falling off.
Yeah.
And when GM researched why, they surveyed all the people who looked at them and test drove them and didn't wind up buying them to find out what the reason they didn't buy them was. And the number one issue was the insurance premiums were so high.
Yes.
And they had gotten a bad reputation.
Well, sure.
Well, it makes me wonder why then, you know.
But all those people still looked at the car.
I can't remember where I read it, but somebody said, some article said that a major car company is regretting their push to stop producing sedans and moving more towards trucks and SUVs. It might have been Ford
like
they were talking about.
They were killing everything but the Mustang and I think all SUVs and pickups. I mean, I believe even the Taurus was being killed and the
And they turned around and said they regretted it. And I'm like, well, what, you know?
It's stupid.
Yeah, why should we?
Which makes me regret my review of the Fusion that I wrote a couple of years ago. It was kind of a, it's on our website. It was kind of a parting shot kind of thing. I said, well, I hear the Fusion's going to be going away with all the other Ford cars, so I've rented one. So
Fusion, here's that's what I was trying to go for.
Yeah, here's a review of it. And as far as I know, they're actually still cranking them out right now. So
right.
Good, because it's a decent car.
It's a decent car. I mean, and decent cars are okay. I hate the idea that the whole thing is a market-driven enterprise. And I say that sentence and I know how stupid I sound when I say it because those are companies that are simply out to make money. And I understand this. However, does everyone need an SUV? And I'm not talking to the car companies at this point. I'm talking to the drivers.
No, we don't.
Right. Yeah. Thank you.
I'm just saying. And yes, I have one now. I got it for a specific reason, but if I had to choose just one car, it would be my muscle/sports/whatever you want to define a Mustang as.
And so now that I've said this, my next car is probably going to be an SUV.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of good reasons to have one, but, you know, it was just the reason why I went in that direction is because I have two boys and
you have a reason.
My Pontiac and my Mustang where they're fun. There's not a lot of room. They're not good for road trips and you can't go off road. And I wanted to have adventures with my kids.
Right.
And the other cars were like, eek, there's dirt. I can't go there. You know, this one, it's 4x4.
Right.
And I love having, you know, a hatchback type car for a lot of practical reasons and nobody's making a decent one anymore.
Really?
Basically, unless you want to go to, you know, a little small crossover.
Even hatchbacks are now no longer on the market?
There are a few, but there aren't that many, and they're not as great as they used to be. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Ben, you got a trivia question for us today?
Sure, yeah. Since we mentioned Ford pickups a moment ago.
You know what we need before you get into the question?
That?
We need a sound bite or a sound effect that marks off Grand Trivia Auto, like fanfare or something. Let me look into that. I'll see if I can find us a sound effect.
And I don't mean it. I know you were about to say something, but I just realized it's 2020.
Yes.
We're supposed to be getting our new Bronco this year.
Oh, that's
Did anybody see the new Ranger last year? Wait, what happened?
What happened to the Ranger? What missed? Yeah.
It was supposed to come out last year because it's the platform for the new Bronco, just like it used to be. Wait a minute. I need to do a little web search here.
Well, you know what we had talked about doing before was spending a day with a dealer. We should probably go do that. Make friends with a Ford dealer and just walk around that place for a day.
And think about those new cars. The other day I saw the new C8 Corvette for the first time. The only thing was, and I saw eight of them at a time. Only problem was they're all wrapped in white plastic and heading the opposite direction on the interstate on the back of a truck. Right. So not much of a look.
Right. It's a very quick flash. So, Ben. Grand Trivia Auto.
Right. So since we were talking about Ford pickups a few minutes ago, pretty much everybody knows that the Ford F-Series is the best-selling U.S. vehicle of all time. It's been around a while. It's in its 13th generation now. I do not have total all-time sales figures, but its best year was something like 939,000.
Wow.
So the question is, in what year was the F-Series truck introduced? Was it 1937, 1948, 1952, or 1960?
See, I didn't pay attention for all of that because I'm sitting here searching up Bronco. So did you say the Ford F-Series?
Yes.
When was the Ford F-Series introduced?
1937, I'm going with.
Well, why don't we come back to that after a topic or two?
Oh, well, Mickey looked like he was pondering the question.
No. I mean, I've got thoughts going through my mind, Brian.
Keep our single listener in suspense for a few minutes.
So. Well, I'm not saying you have to reveal the answer, but we can take our guesses.
Well, yeah.
Okay, Car and Driver is saying 2021 Ford Bronco.
Well, there you go.
So we'll see it in a few months.
We'll see it in a few months. Yeah.
It's looking very much like an FJ in this picture.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's not.
But there. I also see the resemblance to the ones from
the older Broncos. Yeah.
That top better come off. That's all.
So if it's a 2021 model, we'll see it in this fall, right? We'll see it for the fall release.
I'm tired of being patient. How long have I been patient for?
I don't remember.
Let's visit your auto advocate.
So on the line, I've got Ray Shefska. Ray Shefska is your auto advocate. Ray has 42 years in the business. Is that right?
Closer to 43, I think. But
yeah,
I'm trying to lose track.
So a lot of people don't actually stick within their industries for that long. What was it that led you down this road and to stick with the automotive industry for so long?
I'm not really sure. I just know that 43 years ago, I was scheduled to get married in June of that year. And my fiance at the time, she thought it might be a good idea if I actually had a job. So I answered an ad for a dealership in Berlin, New Jersey called Iannocco Motors. They sold Subaru and Dodges in 1977, and they were looking for salespeople. And I took a flyer and I answered the ad, and I was one of the seven salespeople that they hired. And they told us in our training session to look around because by the end of the week, there would only be two people left.
Wow.
Yes. And I looked around and I guessed wrong as to who the second person was going to be. But yeah. And I got a job and I got married.
Who was the second person?
Good morning, Mickey. The second person was a gentleman by the name of Ron Gabb, who was a wonderful young man, kind of almost like a country hick. I'll never forget when he would sell a car, he'd sell a pre-owned car. He would tell people that every one of our pre-owned cars comes with a 50-50 guarantee. Wasn't a guarantee, it was a guarantee.
Right.
And he spelled it, and he wrote it on the buyer's order this way, 50-50 guarantee, G-A-R-N-T-E-E. Ronnie was just a wonderful fella and had been in the construction business before that. He was he just really connected with people. So it worked out well for him and apparently for me, I think.
Yeah.
43 years, yeah.
I mean, the success to being a good representative in that regard is to have the people skills more so than anything else, wouldn't you say?
I would say that. I have, you know, there's a lot of different sayings in the car business, but I came up with one of my own. I figured that as salespeople, we were really in the entertainment business. Mm. And what I used to tell salespeople when I was a manager was if you give your customers a good show, they'll part with their dough. and it's true. If people are laughing and having a good time, which is hard to imagine at a car dealership, they'll spend their money and they'll refer other people because it shouldn't be like pulling teeth. It should be a pleasant experience. And we've done everything we can in the automobile industry to make it something other than a pleasant experience. So I've tried over 43 years to change that as much as I can.
Well, I'm looking forward to talking more about this as we get deeper into our segments with the thing about cars. For this particular segment, I wanted to tackle one thing that you put on our list, which was to talk about finance versus lease options. You know, could we briefly talk about how finance options work? And
finances, as most people do today, most people finance their car. And when I first started in the business, the typical loan period was 24 to 36 months. Today, the typical loan period is 60 to sometimes 84, maybe even 96 months. Once you get beyond 60 months, it really becomes troublesome for the consumer, because we live in a society where nobody plans to keep a car for 6 years,
right?
And they want to get out of the car in three, and they won't be in a positive equity position until they've been in the car, well, five of the 6 years. So when we do extended term financing, it really creates long-term issues for the customers. But most customers finance for 60 to 84 months. That's kind of standard today. There's other financing available that are like deferred down payment programs. BMW uses that, where they set a residual value for the vehicle, and that becomes your deferred down payment. That's due when your finance term is up. So you're either in a position where you have to trade out of the car, or say you have to come up with $15,000. Well, if you didn't have it when you got into the car, you're not going to have it when you get out of the car. So most people trade out of it. And then there's leasing. And today, probably about 30 to 35% of all cars that are sold are leased. Your luxury brands like BMW and Mercedes, that number might be closer to 50 or 55%. And leasing is a way for people to get into more car at a lower payment, because they're only paying for the portion of the car that they're using, the depreciation that they're using of the car. And the beauty of leasing is you know what your expense is month in and month out. And so I recommend leasing to everyone, because it makes more sense to lease things that depreciate and buy things that appreciate. Mm-hmm. And I can assure you that buying a car other than, say, maybe a Ferrari Enzo or a McLaren, buying a car is a losing proposition. If, for instance, I was your financial advisor and you called me for some advice, and I said to you, Mickey, if you give me $30,000 today, I promise you, I can turn that into 15 grand in 3 years. And that's buying a car.
That is buying a car. That's exactly right.
Yes. And so I recommend leasing. If you really believe in your heart of hearts that you're better off buying a car, at least in today's world, we're dealing with interest rates that are at historically low levels. So the cost of financing won't be as outrageous as it's been in the past. But I would strongly recommend leasing to people. It's, you know, most people want to get a new car every 3 years, and that's exactly what leasing encourages you to do. To get into that new car.
Well, I have a couple of questions. Clearly, you're in favor of leasing over buying. And you're also, and in terms of actually going through a standard finance agreement, you're not in favor of the long-term loans, are you?
I am not. Here's what happens, and I've experienced it over the 40-some years that I've been doing this. Personal will buy a car and start at a 60-month loan. And in 3 years, they want to get out of the car, and they come to the dealership to trade it in. And lo and behold, they owe $2,000 or $2,500 more than the value of their car. So they are the proud possessor of negative equity. How is it you would like to handle your negative equity, folks? And the answer for most people is, oh, I'd like to roll that into my next loan. Right. Okay, we do that. And in order to keep you at a payment range that's comfortable on a monthly basis, we now go to a 72-month loan. Great. Here's the problem. In 36 months, you now want to get out of that 72-month loan.
Right.
How were you hoping to handle that $4,500 of negative equity that you have? Well, I'd like to roll that into my next loan. Well, now we're at a 84-month loan to be at a payment that's comfortable. And you're never getting out of that. At that point, when they want to trade out of that car, you have to look at them. And it's like the old, I think it was a Castrol commercial years ago, TV commercial. You can either pay me now or you can pay me later. And at a certain point, when you keep rolling negative equity into your new car loans, you've got to pay me now, because the bank is not going to allow you to roll that much into your next loan. Here's the reason why I say leasing makes the most sense, especially for people that find themselves in that position. If they were to lease the car, they're rolling all that negative equity into the lease, and in 3 years, they're done. They no longer have any negative equity, and they can start fresh on their next car.
So the wise thing to do in general is to go for the shorter term leasing, even if it means you walk out the door with not as much car.
Well, you should be able to walk out the door with more car. Typically, leasing allows you to get more car for less money.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Right. I used the wrong word. So you're if I wanted to just buy a car instead of leasing one, then I should go for the shorter term loan.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Excellent stuff. How do folks find your blog?
Well, they would go to yourautoadvocate.com. Not sure why they'd want to do that, but if they did, they would go to yourautoadvocate.com, and that'll take you to our blog. It'll take you to our website. You'll get to see videos and pictures of both my son and I, and you'll realize that my son got his looks from his mother. and that I'm just an old guy trying to help a few people out.
And I think this concept is great, and I hope we get to have a number of these good conversations and take more of your wisdom to a larger audience here. I think this is fantastic.
Well, I've gotten to the point in my life where I want to give back a little bit. When you're younger, you want to take. When you get older, you want to give. I'm trying to give back. Now, it doesn't mean I don't want to take, too. There is a fee for our services, but it's a very reasonable fee.
Right.
And really, I don't know that you can put a price on the amount of value I can bring to a transaction.
Ray, thank you for your time. We're looking forward to the next segment of Your Auto Advocate, and we'll see you again in about a week.
Terrific. Thank you, Mickey. It was a pleasure.
Yes, sir. All right. So a user question. Robert actually sent us a couple questions, and we can knock them both out. Robert says, where is the dividing line between needing a plug-in core heater for your engine block and not?
I'd say that line is probably about Iowa.
Right? Well.
Because you definitely need it in Minnesota.
Do you really?
Well, I don't know. I've never lived there, but, if it's cold enough where you live that you really need a little pre-warming of your engine to be able to start it.
Right. Well, I mean, you're talking about a geographic line, and I was thinking of a temperature line. So,
well,
right.
I was thinking if you have more snow days than sunny days, if you wear pants more than you wear shorts, if you don't know what it's like to go to go without a coat on, possibly.
What if you're an Arctic nudist? And you don't wear pants at all.
Then you probably don't have a car anyways, because I don't think cars work well in the Arctic.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, of course, the sled dogs don't, their body heat isn't as much as you'd get from a car engine. It's an interesting question. I'm aware of these things, but I think wonder,
Becca's got an interesting.
Maybe yeah, so. Yeah. Yeah.
If you wear, if you have more snow days than not, then you probably need a heater.
Because I think the whole thing is oil viscosity, whether you can turn your engine if that oil is just so thick in the bearings. But with modern cars going to tighter and tighter bearings and thinner oils,
yes.
I wonder if the block heater is as prevalent as it used to be.
So
I don't think a lot of people know about them as much as used to.
I want to back up though and say that for the vast majority of people in the world, you do not need a block heater. You simply just don't need it.
Right.
And so that's like 99% of the drivers on the planet.
Right? And I can think of some time. I think the only time I ever was aware of seeing a car that had one, I think I was in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan or someplace like that, and saw, I think it was a Chevy Celebrity or something that had a plug cord hanging through its grill.
Right. So the thing that I read was that for older cars in particular, if the temperature routinely gets like below negative 15 degrees Celsius, which is really
that's pretty freaking cold. Yeah.
And that's the actual scientific point where you might need a heater.
Scientific definition of really freaking cold.
Really freaking cold.
Really freaking cold.
When you step outside, you go, ah! that might be it. Yeah.
Yes. Well, one thing to keep in mind, freezing point that they talk about is for water.
Yeah.
So as long as you're mixing your antifreeze at 50-50, it doesn't freeze at 32 or zero.
No.
Your oil is the same. So yeah, it's one thing to think about that it's not water. It's going to take longer to freeze. And
it's not the water they're worried about. It's the oil.
Right. Yeah. That's what I'm saying, that most people think of freezing at 32 and zero.
Right.
But it doesn't pertain to the oil or your cooling system.
Right.
As long as you've got properly mixed, it's that antifreeze that keeps the boiling temperature raised and the freezing temperature a lot lower.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, even if you're freezing all the time, I don't know how sludgy would it get. It wouldn't freeze though.
Right. So here's an article that's, we're gonna have to do some editing here. Again, the you only need to use your block heater once the temperature reaches negative 15 degrees Celsius. That's what this article says.
Yeah. Which so is, Minnesota, yeah. Parts of Ohio. Mm-hmm. Parts Dakotas. Of Michigan. Yeah, the Dakotas, definitely.
Alaska.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that line was moving up. I didn't think that most of the contiguous 48 needed that, hit that mark.
They might not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Buffalo, maybe. Right?
It gets pretty cold there. Yeah.
Well, off the lakes, that's a reason why I was pointing out certain areas. Yeah. Off the Great Lakes, the areas around there can be quite intense as far as ice and snow and winter storms. And it's really, you know, 10 out of 12 months, how I put it.
Right. And last point on the whole block heater thing, I've heard of but never seen a block heater, like aftermarket solution that inserted through your dipstick hole.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And you plugged that in instead of actually having one installed.
I saw one of those in an old J.C. Whitney catalog somewhere. Yeah.
Good old
J.C.
Whitney.
And that way it heated your oil directly as opposed to heating up the entire block of metal around the line.
Oh, yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah. So that's the answer to your question, Robert. If we fail to answer it, please submit your question again in triplicate via the Think About Cars website. Click the Contact Us link and send us a question there.
I'm derailing people's train of thought again. I try to be subtle so that I'm not making noise.
Rebecca.
Oh, my God.
You cannot do subtle.
Did you just use the R word?
I did.
Okay. We need to take a pause so that I can commit some violence over here. You don't need to hear what's going to happen to Mickey.
I'm in big trouble.
We need sound effects for me beating the poop out of you.
We can do that. I've got that. So second question from Robert. Can I go on with another user question here?
Well, wait, yeah. Can I have a stroke here for a minute?
Sure.
Cause I have not been doing very well with keeping up with automotive news lately. I've had a lot going on in my life and I don't know if anybody just saw the face that I made or that I almost fell out of my chair and ripped the headphones off my head. I was looking at the Bronco news and I came across the 2021 Ford Mustang Mach-E.
Oh yeah.
Oh, my.
Is this the first time you're seeing this?
I had only heard rumors and the jingling around right up there with the SUV and the station wagon. And oh, my God, in 2021, Ford is apparently releasing, well, the model year 2021, so late 2020, the all-electric Mustang. And I want to choke or gag or something saying that statement. I'm sure it's great that that option is out there.
Some of
the
world's most exciting supercars are electric.
You know how I am. It's my personal.
You like
my personal feelings about this.
You like a big gassy V8.
Yes.
Yeah.
For me, size matters. I'm sorry.
She couldn't call it a gassy V8. I mean, that sounds kind of wrong too.
It's okay. Thank you for driving all your electric cars. I greatly appreciate it. It saves more gas for me. Okay, so what was your second question over there?
I don't know.
So is that gassy V8 one that's full of beans? If anybody knows that phrase.
It's got a lot of get up and go.
Actually, I think beans cost more per gallon.
So, I'm looking at our board here. Why do people speed so much? That's one thing that we have at the top of our list for today.
Yeah, that one came up. My wife Jennifer and I were out walking yesterday in our neighborhood, and there's this one street that's, I think, a 45, and everybody goes through there, 55 plus probably, and it's, you know, kind of a theme we've been noticing. Everybody drives around really, really fast, And we start to, you know, kind of ponder why. What is it that motivates everybody to always be so fast all the time? And it's an interesting question, probably one that doesn't have a single answer, but
multi-answers.
Right, right.
And plus, you're in a residential area, so that's a whole other question than why would you speed on the highway or surface streets?
Right. And, you know, several things we came up with off the top of our heads. You know, one of them, I think one is probably just our modern world. Our modern world has really conditioned us all to be very impatient.
And we're always in such a hurry for everything.
Right. Another one is, I think a little bit of blame goes to the modern automobile itself because it's so quiet, so isolating, so sensory deprived. And so many of them, including our little SUVs and crossovers, are sitting higher and higher, and a higher, you know, viewing position of the road gives you less impression of speed. And with so many other sensory deficits, if you want to put it that way, with a reduced impression of speed, you tend to go a little faster.
That's why you have a giant speedometer in front of you.
Well, yeah. Even then, I mean, there have been articles written on the idea that it's all that sensory input that people are trying to hit. They're trying to hit a certain sensory threshold that is not connected to a speedometer, and they simply drive to the point where they're comfortable doing it.
Right, right.
And what? Yeah.
Plus, all the new cars, they're advertising that it's sensory. What, depriving, I guess, so that, oh, you don't feel the outside world. And
they advertise power, too.
Right. So the thing, though, is that, you know, as humans, we have these sensory thresholds.
Right.
You can be conscious of them and you can override them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you don't always
easily
need to artificially hit that threshold and then look down and realize you're going 80 miles an hour.
And this is something that came up, too, in that traffic book that we've discussed in the past. Mm-hmm.
Jen, get on mic.
Hi, Jen.
Nextdoor.com.
Oh, it's not on.
Hit it.
Nextdoor.com, post after post, you know, people saying, you know, somebody's going to smack a kid one of these times or a pet, mm-hmm. you know,
I have.
That's just one source that I see, and I'm not the only one, at least.
I have that app, too. Yeah, but it's. It's like I was mm-hmm. saying when we weren't recording, I have a steep driveway. People fly through my neighborhood. I'm right by a blind curve. I really talk about putting a sign out my front yard that says, if you hit my kid because you're speeding, you're not going to need a lawyer.
Nice.
That would not go well in court.
I don't care.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. I think if somebody hurts my kid, I'm not making it out of there without handcuffs anyways, because I'm not. Uh-uh.
Well, let's hope it never happens anyway. So,
but I think it's a lot of it as far as the neighborhoods, the residential areas. I think a lot of it is a lack of respect, a self-centered nature, which is so prevalent nowadays. They're not concerned about you. They don't care about your dog. They really don't care at all about your kids. They want to go fast, and that's what they're going to do. When you pull into a neighborhood, you slow down, mm-hmm. you turn down the freaking music, especially if it's after 11 o'clock at night. I don't mean to sound that old, but kids are sleeping, and it's, you know, show some respect to the people that live there.
Ben.
Well, yeah, because and that does tie back to something that Mickey said, too, about with comfort zones. You may feel perfectly natural going at a certain speed, but that might be a faster speed than the world around you can react to, like that pedestrian or dog or, you know, child on a bicycle. Funny, too, last night, I think I was awake at some point in the wee hours for, you know, a moment or two, and I heard in the distance what sounded like somebody street racing.
Oh, boy. That's a whole nother topic, because I kind of like the idea of street racing, but...
Right, and we can go in so many directions with this, because I'm a stickler for certain laws, but I have a trouble with, you know, I have trouble with the speed limit, but I also know what situation I'm in and when it's appropriate and when it's really not safe.
Going back to my original point, though, is like, you know, you do have a stimulus threshold. If it's not a question of respect, if it's not a question of simply being self-centered, I think that the person does have an obligation to at least be aware, and it becomes sort of an internal mental discipline akin to meditating, right? You may like that stimulus threshold that gets hit around 50 miles an hour on a residential street, but you have to exert the internal willpower to not destroy the environment while you're in it.
Right. But you've got eyeballs and you've got ears and things like that. If you,
that's what I'm saying.
If you don't have the common sense to watch your speedometer when you pull into a neighborhood, you shouldn't be driving a car.
One last thought, and then we'll let Ben wrap up the episode with Grand Theft Auto, is that in my neighborhood, we actually hired an off-duty police officer to come do a speed study. And they ran license plate numbers for everyone came through the neighborhood and clocked their speeds. Mm-hmm. No tickets were given during this time, but during the entire length of the speed study, the people who were speeding through the neighborhood, that particular neighborhood, were the people who lived there.
Oh, yeah. I'm the quite visitors, sure that most people that are doing it in my neighborhood the are visitors, the people that live there.
The visitors were not speeding in that particular neighborhood. And that's when I stood up and said, you know, it's the sightseers who are slowing down. Everyone else is in a rush to get home.
Yeah. No, my HOA, who has brought it up because there are cars, we notice which cars they are and where they park. And we know it's mostly the people that live there, they are just disrespectful to their neighbors. Nobody meets their neighbors anymore. They couldn't care less.
That's a whole nother conversation, but you're absolutely right. Neighbors don't know each other there. There's no real sense of community anymore in a lot of these places. Some places have it, but Ben, what was our trivia question?
Okay, so flashing back just a little bit, the Ford F-Series truck is, of course, the highest selling vehicle of U.S. automakers in all time history. And the question was, what year was it introduced? And I think the choices were 1937, 1948. I think it was 52 and 60 were the other ones. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I know which two I'm not picking.
So
my thought is, Becca's already said 37.
I've already said 37. Yes.
Any reason why?
The F-Series goes back quite a ways.
It goes back a long ways.
Yes.
I'm going to say 48, was it?
One of them, yeah.
I'm going to say 48 because post-war, I'm thinking, is when the F completely took off and started to become way more widely accessible.
I was going to say post-war to kind of give you a visual of that time frame, yeah.
And for our younger listeners, that's...
World War II.
That's World War II.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you don't know what that is, Google it.
No, I've already insulted them. We don't need to. So Ben, what is the answer?
1948.
48. Oh.
It was not the first Ford truck, of course.
Right. Well,
way
that
back
was
to
the problem
Model T era.
Right.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. Ford's been building trucks for a long, long time.
But yeah. Mine was trying to decide when the F series actually was integrated into it. But yeah, their trucks they go way back to pre-Depression and all of that. Yeah.
And so, yeah, production started in 47 for the 48 model year, and the first generation ran until 1952, and that first generation had 8 different submodels, the F1 through F8, which were all so named for their cargo capacity. The F1 was a half ton, and the F7 and F8 were somewhere north of 2 tons. Wikipedia just lists them as big job.
I don't think I would want to have anything called an F8, just because if you say it, it's fate.
I don't know if anybody thought of that at the time or not.
There's jokes in there. I'm just saying.
But yeah, there was an F1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They're really good-looking trucks, I think. I had a friend a number of years ago, who was trying to restore an F1, and it was available with either an inline 6 or a V8, both flatheads. And a pretty good little vehicle, and it obviously laid the ground for much more success.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Ford's inline 6 was nothing to snark at. I mean, you know how I am.
It's a very well-regarded engine, yeah.
Well, I'm snobby as far as engines go, but the Falcons and cars like that were, and even more modern, were running that inline 6 and competing with the V8s. It was a good, strong engine.
Oh, yeah.
On that note, we're going to wrap the episode. Thank you to all of our listeners for telling your friends about us and getting them to subscribe to the Think About Cars. We love it, again, when you give us ratings via iTunes or Spotify. It makes us much more easier to find. And thank you for joining us in the conversation. We post occasional things on our Facebook page that we don't ever talk about on the air. And we love getting your feedback via our website. If you like what we do, please support us via Patreon, patreon.com/thethingaboutcars. That'll let us do more of this bigger, better, stronger, and faster. Thanks for your support. And thanks for subscribing again. We'll see you again with another episode in about a week.
Bye.
See ya.
See ya.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.